This is Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Dr. Richard Foster is with us. We've had a little change in our program today. And Dr. Foster, thank you for joining us here, Richard.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry I got delayed, but delighted to be with you.
Yes, I'm going to introduce you in this way. Richard is a Christian theologian of the Quaker tradition.
Mm-hmm.
He's authored many devotional classics, including many of you have probably read the book, The Celebration of Discipline, named by Christianity Today as one of the top 10 books in the 20th century. And we're going to focus a little bit, Richard, if we could, first a little on your background. Let's let the listeners get to know you. And then we'll come into focus just on your one book, and he's written many books. I would commend every book that Richard's written, but he's written this book, Prayer, Finding the Heart's True Home. And we're going to spend the bulk of our time in that book because it's literally life-changing. Well, Dr. Foster, do you mind, as a start, just mentioning something about yourself? I said Quaker. We can use the word friends. How has your religious background influenced your writing and your understanding?
Well, a great deal. I did not grow up in the Friends Church, but as a teenager, and my parents were quite ill, an evangelical Friends Church in Southern California really gathered around our family, my two brothers and I, and was a great help in those days. All the money that I had tried to save up for college had to go for my mother, particularly her hospital bills and so on. And so that little Friends Church was very instrumental in helping me go to college. And so it has been a great influence in the sense I became a Christian in the context of the work and ministry of that Quaker, evangelical Quaker church, and the sense of the importance of Scripture. The first 2 years as a new Christian, the youth pastor didn't particularly go in for all the, you know, fun and games. We took a 2-year study through the book of Romans, which was very formative for me, even as a, you know, a young Christian. The sense of breadth of the Christian witness, encouraging me, for example, to read Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Cost of Discipleship way back then, and how helpful that was. Really, the sense of discipleship was formed in me through studying Bonhoeffer. I, you know, just didn't see much of that around in the world. And then the kind of care for social concerns and evangelical passion for the life of Christ, those were all formative things for me through those years.
I would like to say about you, Dr. Foster, that you've touched my life because God has touched yours, and you have reached into the treasury of a whole realm of Christendom that we evangelicals have tended to neglect. And your book, of course, on spiritual disciplines, A Celebration of Discipline, was just groundbreaking, selling millions of copies and touching lives and helping a whole sector of the Christian church to see that there are these treasures that have been buried in time. And what's interesting... Go ahead.
That's wise of you. I mean, kind of you. Experience I had in the Friends Church, because the leadership there were very open to the great treasures of Christian faith, and that opened me even more. And I don't know exactly how it all came about, but in a first little church I pastored, little Friends Church, that was kind of a marginal failure on the ecclesiastical scoreboard, but I sort of instinctively had the sense that the great devotional masters really had something to teach me. And so I went back as a young pastor and began to soak in, you know, St. Augustine and Teresa of Avila and St. Francis of Assisi and, of course, John Woolman and many others, and that was very helpful because I knew that I didn't have the resources that were needed to help these people, and I didn't see it, you know, very much in, say, the 20th century, that we had to step back further and see the great tradition of Christians all through history, and then you'd have a whole vision of life. Of course, the biblical witness, the New Testament, and further back into the Old Testament, oh my.
Before we get further into this, I'd like to say I really enjoyed watching some of the videos you've got on your website of the time with your son Nathan at Spring Arbor University.
Yeah.
Featuring his book, Wisdom Chaser. And I want to tell you that I love reading your books, but watching you, seeing your smile, your joy, what this did for me as a pastor, I think our listeners can relate. Along with reading your books, it always does this for me, too. It slowed me up inside. And I saw how much you just enjoyed talking and just being with your son and thinking about climbing where you live there in the Rockies. And you have such a grasp on the biblical concept of rest and Sabbath and finding the right seasons and balances in life. And that's something I think we desperately need in our day.
Boy, isn't that true. I mean, today we're just sort of overcome with noise and hurry and crowds and climb and push and shove.
Yeah.
And we need that sense of resting in God. One of the old writers, Leti Guyon, said, rest, rest. All you need to do is rest in God.
Yes. Now, I'm also very touched in your work, the way that you're bringing the different streams of Christianity together. In your writings, your speaking, and really it comes together in your heart, I'm sure, and through your experience.
Well, they have a composite likeness of godliness, if you will. All of these great writers, out of many different traditions, you understand, the Christian faith is a amazing patchwork, and yet the commonality and the reason for that, of course, is that Christ is the leader. For all of these groups and all of these people, now they can get it wrong and do many times, but then we do too. But we can learn from these folk, and they can really teach us, and there is a depth of life in the giants of the faith, both Protestant and Catholic and Orthodox. The commonalities are far greater than the things that separate us. So I try to focus on that.
And your ministry has gone far and wide, and yet, as can be expected, because you've pulled in from these streams, some people will take certain authors and say, wow, this Dr. Foster, he featured this author, and look what they also said over here.
Uh-huh.
And I know you've dealt with that from the start, and yet... let me put it this way. I recently interviewed the author of The Shack, Paul Young, and he really walks the edges. That's one reason, though, his that shack sold so powerfully. It drew interest. But you've been willing to walk on the edges at times with authors. And I want to say this in fairness and let you comment on this whole realm of your ministry. I'm a Presbyterian pastor.
Okay.
And we talk about John Calvin, but we don't talk about the fact that he was anti-Semitic. I mean, he had his flaws. Who doesn't? And which of the church leaders didn't? We sometimes put our own leaders and our own sects under this stained glass window of a memory of perfection, and it just isn't that way, is it?
Right, absolutely. Like you mentioned, I mean, Calvin, my goodness, think of the institutes and the influence he had, but he certainly had his flaws. And you know, when we think of it, who doesn't? I mean, so many people today, they get the idea there was the early church and then there's us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a few people, there might be a blip at the Reformation, but not much else. Now, look, we all have strengths and we all have flaws. And the perspective of history helps us a great deal, as you mentioned, you see. You know, here, John Calvin and Martin Luther, much the same, and they were people of their times. But what shines through is the great spiritual treasures that they have, and that's what I try to focus on and always have, rather than, you know, remember how the Apostle Paul put it, we have this treasure in earthen vessels.
Yes, yes.
Now the treasure, he says, is the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. The earthen vessel is the human body and the cultural forms that we use to enshroud the treasure. And what we're to give to one another is the treasure, not the vessel.
Yes.
I have plenty of flaws. Of course, Nathan, in his book, Wisdom Chaser, uncovers some of those. He wrote that, and I had no part to play in it at all until after it was done, and it was just fun to see his perspective.
Oh, he's the character. He's a pistol. He calls you the great dreaming pessimist, huh?
Yes, isn't that interesting? Right?
Well, I think what I see in that, honestly, is your humility.
Well,
you don't expect a lot, and you just, whatever God has, and that comes out in your writing. You don't, well, anyway, thank you. Thank you for being God's servant, Dr. Foster. And tell us a little about, before we go into the book, about renovare.
Renovare, now that's just a Latin word. It means to give new life. Think of the English word renovate. and, of course, Paul's words in 2 Corinthians, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are, the most translations say, being renewed day by day. That word renewed is renovare. We are being renovated day by day. And so, at this important juncture in my history, some 25 years ago or so, I felt that God was asking us to work at this renovation of the life and spiritual formation. And so gathered a kind of ragtag group of people from around the country, from all the different Christian traditions, as many as we could, to form a little team, speaking team. Actually, in the back of my mind, I had a couple of, three actually, historical examples. One was St. Francis and the early Franciscans, as they tried to combine a life of contemplative experience with ministry and evangelism. And then the early Quakers, they had a group called the Valiant 60 that would were essentially evangelists going out two by two. And then, of course, the Wesleyan circuit riders. And one of my great heroes, even as a college student, was Francis Asbury and the work that he did in America. So those kind of models. And then we didn't have anything. Well, I always tease it. We started out with God and a laser printer. The laser printer was the only actual possession that we had. We didn't even have the computer to go with it.
Wow.
I had to buy that later. But at any rate, trying to, and we work in teams almost always, traveling and writing, a team of about, I guess there's about 25 of us now. Of course, I'm retired from Renovare, and actually our son Nathan, this is a new event. He continues to teach at Spring Arbor, but he's also kind of developing the speaking ministry team. And our executive director is a wonderful lady from Houston, Rachel Kwan, Chinese lady, who her background is in the Evangelical Chinese Church in Southern California, and a wonderful group. Anyway, and we try to, you know, I always tease that our organizational chart is like Samson. We want to light the tails of the foxes and let them go. And that's a reference in the Old Testament to
Yes.
Samson,
Yes.
The tails of the foxes. and that way, we can stay very small. We only have one or two, maybe two full-time, I guess just one full-time person, a few part-time, and then the rest of us are volunteers, and we just fan out around the country and other countries. We have expressions of Renovari, and Korea is maybe the largest, and in England, a couple other places, I guess, I'm not sure.
Okay, we don't have much time, so I want to get our listeners into this book, Prayer, Finding the Heart's True Home.
Yes.
And I'll start by just saying that the book has this flow of moving inward, and then it moves toward, with 21 types of prayer, toward moving upward and finally moving outward. And Dr. Foster, as we see these 21 types, is it typical for someone to segregate and say, now I'm going to do a simple prayer, now I'm going to move to meditative, or do they just kind of flow together in a person's life?
Well, the latter is far better. I mean, for the sake of analysis or thinking about it, we might divide them in a way like I did. I mean, actually, in the beginning, as I tried to study it, I found about 41 different approaches to prayer all through history. But in actual practice, all of this is flowing back and forth. Think of maybe waves of the ocean that are distinct and yet on top of each other all the time. So actually, prayer is what God and we are working on together, and so we want to allow that to flow. It's a life with God, a with God life, and as we enter into that, it takes many different expressions, and we learn to move with that. One of the old writers put it this way: the soul, light as a feather, fluid as water, innocent as a child, responds to every movement of grace like a floating balloon. How's that for a description of prayer?
I love it. Okay, so your first chapter talks about simple prayer.
Yes.
And I like that what you really do is draw us in to realize wherever we're at in our prayer life, we can grow. I'm quoting, I got my book downloaded. Listener, you can get this on Kindle today. It's $10. So I'm reading on my Kindle. I can't point to a page number, but you say, we do not take occasional joggers and put them in a marathon race. We must not do that with prayer either. Can you expand on that?
That's so important. I mean, in the early days, I tried to be heroic in these things, you know, and I got what the old writers called spiritual indigestion from it. And then I learned just to take it where I am, you know, that Dom Julian statement, pray as you can, not as you can't. And it's so important, because so often I try to pray as I can't and to be, you know, be a hero in it. And then learn that I just simply build a history with God, and it begins right where I am. And for every person who's listening, that's the important thing. You begin where you are. I think of that story of Moses at the burning bush. God had to tell him to take off his shoes. He didn't know he was on holy ground, and it's right where we are. That's holy ground, and that is the place, the only place, that we will build a history with God. So, in our work, and with our families, in the various tasks that we undertake, that are just normal tasks of life, after we finish talking here, I have some work to do outside. We have a little acreage, get things ready for winter. You see, now I want to, as best I can, do that with God in a living life conversation, experience, openness, listening, laughing, enjoying each other's company.
Yes, yes. The next chapter, the Prayer of the Forsaken, I want to acknowledge any one of these chapters we could spend a whole hour on so easily. And I know you could spend hours on any one. But I want to give the readers, we're just going to dip into several chapters, give them a sense of this incredible writing of yours. You describe this, here's one sentence, God is always present with us. We know that theologically. But there are times when he withdraws our consciousness of his presence. And what I'd like you to do is unpack a little bit your own experience. It really touched me when you described how you stopped your public speaking, you stopped all writing, and God led you in a time that lasted 18 months.
18 months.
Tell us about it.
Well, and I just want to say to every person listening, if you haven't had these kinds of experiences, you will. Because this is what God leads us into in order to grow our soul. And the intimacy of the relationship deepens so that we don't trust in the false gods of our own feelings or, this or that. And we learn to walk by faith and not by sight. That particular experience, it was at one of the heights of, speaking and ministry and really feeling that God was telling me to be quiet. And one of the first things, see, that I had to learn in that is how to resign as CEO of the universe. And that God can do quite well without me.
Yeah.
And now I had things to do. I was teaching at a college and, so I had all of that, but the actual travel, public ministry work, and writing ceased. Mm. And that was the time of listening. And out of that grew, you see, Renovare. I wouldn't have even considered such a thing. And when the idea, I was out one day jogging, and when I jogged, I would start by singing some hymns. Now, you understand how I jog. These had to be very slow hymns.
Says the man who climbs the Rockies 14,000 feet.
Well, yeah, you got to do that slow. And it was the whole idea kind of tumbled out. And I said to myself, this won't succeed. Because I know something about how, movements come about and the resources. And I didn't have any of that. And it was like this sense of God just saying, I'm not asking you to succeed.
Mm.
That's not my business. Just try. Just be out there. And so that's how that began. But it was, as I remember, about 18 months before we begin to start doing anything. And that is the hidden preparation through which God puts his ministers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of Moses in the desert for 40 years. And a dear friend, this was early on, many years ago, I was preaching on Moses, and I was waxing eloquent about it, and I said, we want to learn these lessons so it doesn't take us 40 years like it took Moses. And one dear fellow in the congregation, very wise man, he just spoke up, and he said, I doubt it. I mean, it ruined the sermon, but it was a teaching moment for not just for me, but for our whole group, that we need to respect the hidden preparation. You think of the Apostle Paul, Saul, who becomes Paul, and then he disappears for 3 years into the deserts, and then another 10 years in his hometown of Tarshish. I mean, it's 13 years from his conversion before he appears at Antioch and the great work of his ministry begins.
Yeah. And sometimes when we feel forsaken, we can go a level deeper, or it may just be as we're entering a sense of God's heart about others, jumping a chapter to the Prayer of Tears.
Yes.
You mentioned David Brainerd. You gave a great example of a pastor friend I really related to. And it's interesting to me how you show how the ancients through history, Christians who really knew the depths of God's heart through prayer, saw that the tears were tied also to joy. Help us understand that.
We have today, generally in our culture, such a superficial understanding of joy. We think it has to always be giddy or something. But the ancient writers and their experience, they knew. They knew that joy often came through great pain. Because, in part, we learn to identify with people and stand with them. A dear friend who has just gotten out of the hospital, and I just talked with him last night on the phone, and it's been several weeks since I was able to talk with him because he was in the hospital without being able to respond, and to pray with him, and I got kind of weepy, and I wasn't planning on that, but the joy and yet the pain in it and the sorrow, they mix together well, really. I mean, you think of Jesus, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, and yet the great joy of the Lord that just pervaded everything he did.
Wow.
And we see that in many of the Christians. I think of St. Francis, the little monk of Assisi, you know, inebriated with the love of God. And composing these songs and full of joy and, of course, a lot of pain, too.
So we've been talking some about the inner journey, and there are several more chapters that we could look at, and I'm skipping ahead now to the upward, the movement upward. How would you define that? What's the difference?
Well, the movement inward is where God is with us and teaching us about ourselves so that we can follow Socrates' dictum, know yourself, so that we become self-aware in a deeper way. The movement upward is where it's like the needle of a compass swinging to the pole star of the spirit, if you will, that we become God conscious and God aware, and Jesus fills our, you know, the whole vision of our life and the work of the Spirit within us, and the wonderful, if I could put it this way, Trinitarian dance of life that we begin to see and kind of enter into. So we're less focused on us and our needs, for example, and more fully focused upon the glory of God and the goodness of God, and seeing, for example, the glory of God seen in his goodness. It's a wonderful aspect of prayer. It's not more important, I suppose, and yet it is maybe more central to life with God.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and the first chapter is in the prayer of adoration, and I love the way you encapsulated it in your own experience at the annual meeting with a group of writers, and you're up in by the Canadian border on a resort.
Yeah.
And just close us out with that a little bit. And I think that'll encourage people the way I was encouraged to slow up and remember prayer is, as you say in your book, it's really a relationship.
Yes, I had gone with this group of writers that I founded. They still meet, by the way. And I went during a break to this little island, paddled over in a little canoe, and was having just a wonderful... I just asked the Lord to refresh me. And what was it I said? I don't have the book in front of me, but...
I'm weary from a hectic travel schedule. my spirit's grown sad, weighed down by pains and sorrows of many. A little solitude might solve the problem.
And so I asked the Lord to refresh me, and the Lord said, be still.
Mm.
Shalom. And so I enter into that experience, and I begin to think, oh, this is such a wonderful experience. I need to share it with others. And again, those words, be still, silent, shalom.
Mm.
Then settle into that. And then this last temptation, this feeling, oh, this is such a wonderful experience. I need to write it all down.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a pencil or a pen or a computer. I didn't have an iPad. I had to record it. Be still. Rest. That was the other word.
Mm. Well, with those words, let us carry those words in our hearts as we go into this week, listeners. And be sure to join us next week on Monday as we have Marty Angelo with us, this music entrepreneur talking about his journey from heights to depths in prison with drug abuse, coming out with Christ, and he's got an incredible testimony. Dr. Foster, we want to thank you so very much for being with us, and God's blessings on you.
Wonderful to be with you, and every person listening, God bless you, and may his life fill you.
Thank you. God bless.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. And if you'd like to help support this ministry, or if you would like to know more about Beyond Words, visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com.